Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, January 19th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The government today declared the bus accident that killed 26 people along the Harare-Nyamapanda Highway yesterday a national disaster.
We witnessed quite some appalling sights of injured passengers and kids, youths and some elderly people who actually had suffered various types of injuries.
The United States is today honoring the legacy of the slain civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. with activities across the country, which included wreath laying in Maryland, volunteer service activities by churches and community groups.
There are still problems of racism in this country. So the importance of Martin Luther King and what he stood for still exists. That's why we recognize a day like this. It is a reminder to all of us that the struggle continues.
And the MDC formation of former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai says it is in the process of forming a burial society and working out logistics to introduce a medical insurance scheme to cater for its membership.
There is a tendency in this country for CZI and other allied trade organizations such as ZNCC to ask government for solutions. In fact, government must be asking the private sector in terms of what are the solutions.
The government today declared the bus accident that killed 26 people along the Harare-Nyamapanda Highway yesterday a national disaster. This as police released the names of the victims, including four people from the same family. The crash occurred in the afternoon when a Zupco and Pioneer buses sideswiped each other. 25 people died yesterday and one is said to have died today, increasing the death toll to 26. Local Government Minister Ignatius Chombo and Transport Minister Obet Mpofu today visited dozens of injured passengers who were admitted at Parirenyatwa Hospital. While the cause of the accident is still under investigation, Mpofu told Studio 7's Blessing Zulu government would soon review the maximum speed limit. Mpofu narrated what he saw today at Parirenyatwa Hospital.
We witnessed quite some appalling sights of injured passengers and kids, youths and some elderly people who actually had suffered various types of injuries, which quite shocking sight to us. I mean, I felt so emotional about the whole thing, and the Minister Chombo also was there together with our civil servants. It was quite sight which she would not want to see. But look, this is what is before us, and we are doing everything in our power to ensure that this is minimized. And the government has taken some measures also to declare the road carnage a disaster occurrence, which will see the government assisting with the medical support and the other supports which are required by those who are affected.
Dr. Mpofu, some are talking about the dualization of the roads. What are you doing about that, and what are the challenges that you are meeting at the moment?
No, my brother, we would want our roads to be really some of the best roads in the region. But there are financial constraints surrounding that requirement by government. Hence, our attempt to try and invite the motoring public to make a contribution towards that. We have been approached by several potential developers, potential investors in our road infrastructure. But again, the processes take a bit long.
And that was Transport Minister Obet Mpofu on the line with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu. Former MDC Secretary for Transport Elias Mudzuri says the poor state of the roads is primarily to blame for the road carnage, adding the government should fix the roads as fast as possible.
I would want to start by sending my condolences to the families who lost their dear ones in this tragic accident. It said it should not be seen happening. We have had these accidents for quite a long time, and care must be taken in trying to improve our roads. What I have discovered is that the whole country layout, including cities, the roads have terrible potholes. They are now manholes. They are no longer potholes. Or you can actually find a joke on WhatsApp giving up someone fishing on the road after they've hit a potholes. I'm sorry, I'm not sure what happened on this particular road in terms of the nature of the road, because I didn't visit the site. But I can bet you the roads are worst problem, in our worst enemy in this country.
Many people are blaming the poor state of the roads, but is it not time for people to also start focusing on human error?
We have already, in our transport committee, we have debated this. We went on human error. We discussed it. We even went to the extent that some of these buses drivers are taking too long on their apps, or taking too many hours on the roads because maybe it's festive season, or they just want to make up money. But this is January. January people don't travel much other than school children. They don't have much money. So I don't want to blame it on competition for passengers in terms of the distance. I want to say we'll wait and see the investigation, but it's high time our government takes seriously maintenance of roads.
That was former MDC Transport Secretary Alias Mudzuri on the line from Harare. He spoke there with Studio 7's Ntungameli Nkomo.
The United States today honored the legacy of the slain civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. with activities across the country, which included wreath-laying in Maryland, volunteer service activities by churches and community groups, and a rally in South Carolina. King, who was assassinated in 1968, first rose to prominence in 1955 when he led a successful boycott of the public buses in the southern city of Montgomery, Alabama, forcing the city to end its practice of segregating black passengers. He became the central figure of the civil rights movement of the 1950s and 60s, inspiring millions with his famous I Have a Dream speech during the 1963 March on Washington. He received the Nobel Peace Prize in 1964, the same year a landmark civil rights bill was signed by President Lyndon Johnson. On Sunday, talk show host Oprah Winfrey led a cast of the movie Selma in a march to usher the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. The movie chronicles events leading to the historic march from Selma to Montgomery, Alabama, and the passage of the 1965 Voting Rights Act. Meanwhile, Andrew Mulilo, a Zimbabwean based in the United States, tells reporter Standigle Mhlanga that much needs to be done to realize King's dream following various incidents in which unarmed black men were shot to death by police, causing tension and violence, especially in Ferguson, Missouri.
Even if this country now has an African-American president who has been elected twice now to this office, you know, there are still issues, you know, for example, Ferguson in Missouri and I Can't Breathe in New York and the shooting of a kid in Cleveland. There are still problems of racism in this country. So the importance of Martin Luther King and what he stood for still exists. That's why we recognize a day like this. It is a reminder to all of us that the struggle continues.
Looking at those incidents you just mentioned, what do you think are the root causes? Is it still about civil rights?
As far as I'm concerned, it's a two-part thing. Racism still exists. Actually, I was listening to radio not too long ago where a researcher was saying, you know, you talk to policemen sometimes and you talk to other people where they say they're just plain scared of young black men. And why is that so? It's just, you know, some perceived threat, totally unjustified in 99.99% of the case. There's still a lot of inequality in this country, economic inequality. Sometimes jobs, you are not perceived as being qualified for certain things based on your background and nothing else. There are still a lot of young people running around even after high school without employment because those opportunities are lacking in their communities. And those breed the kind of instability that you see sometimes happening. And when that instability occurs, then you get a reaction from the main society about the threat that minorities pose.
But what can you say are the gains so far since the civil rights movement?
A lot of progress has been made. And one of the positive things about people in this country is that they realize and admit that there are still issues that have to be dealt with and are doing whatever they can. But let's not be unrealistic about this. You know, we still have problems and we have to solve them.
That was Hando Mulilo, a Zimbabwean activist based in the United States, on the line from Maryland with the Studio 7, Sister Ndikile Mhlanga.
The Confederation of Zimbabwe Industries, or CZI, has organized an all-stakeholders symposium to discuss deindustrialization, which it says has reached catastrophic levels with the dire consequences for the country's struggling economy. CZI Chief Executive Clifford Zilea told Studio 7 the meeting, whose theme is, quote, "Taking Zimbabwe Industry to the Next Level," will take place Thursday at the Crown Plaza Hotel in Harare. Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa, Mines Minister Walter Chidagwa, and Industry Minister are expected to attend. Local representatives from the International Monetary Fund, World Bank, independent economists, and university lecturers will also attend the Social, Economic, and Political Symposium. The 2014 State of the Manufacturing Sector survey released by the CZI indicates that industrial capacity utilization has declined to 36.3%. Economist Washington Mehlo Makulu speaks with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu about the symposium.
Well, obviously the state of the manufacturing sector has been an area of discussion, I think, in this country over the past 10 years. Obviously, given the economic slowdown, and we have seen this industrialization in the past 8 or so years, we have seen massive company closures, jobs being lost in the manufacturing sector, and we have also seen jobs going offshore. But what is critical in terms of the symposium, I think this is a question that I think CZI also needs to answer, is that there is a tendency in this country for CZI and other allied trade organizations such as ZNCC to ask government for solutions. Now, if you look at the modern global economic model, is that it is private sector driven. We need to be asking, in fact, government must be asking the private sector in terms of what are the solutions to address these factors. Now, the challenge with that approach that the CZI and ZNCC has taken in this country is that they then allow government to take the initiative in terms of setting the agenda. It should be the CZI that really sets up the agenda and says, look, this is how we intend to get industry going.
But your critics, Mr. Mehlo Makulu, would say it is the government that is exhibiting these so-called policy inconsistencies which are actually affecting industries.
Granted, I think that there are issues of public policy that affect how industry operates. But at the same time, industry must come with its act together to say, look, this is what we have put together. This is how we intend to move forward. And we ask government to do A, B, C.
That was Chief Economist Washington Mehlo Makulu on the line from Harare.
Economic commentator Joyce Ngwenya of the Liberal Market Solutions tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube the meeting is a waste of time.
The issue of consultative conferences is something that has been done over and over again, but I really doubt whether there's any value addition because without any outright policy framework change, this becomes another talk shop.
But don't you think that maybe is very important for people to sit down and discuss some of these issues?
Look, I run a think tank, and I know it's always important to discuss and talk about the issues. But once resolutions have been made and policy recommendations have been done, it's important that the incumbent government and the institutions that are responsible for policy reform heed that advice.
Is there any way that maybe the government can make sense out of what people are discussing and then implement some of the resolutions?
You know, the problem that we have with a government that is totally insensitive to professional advice. They are self-centered, they are egotistical, and they are, you know, very arrogant nationalists. We have had so many of these talks, every year we have got talks from the economists, from accountants, from the mining industry. Our government does not take advice. And until they are in a state of mind that accepts advice, these are going to be just expensive, surgeons into rhetoric.
So at the end of the day, this may be a waste of time, right?
To put it blankly, as long as there is a ZANU-PF government in office, this is a total waste of time. They don't listen to advice.
That is economic commentator Joyce Ngwenya of the Liberal Market Solutions speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Harare.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
the MDCT forms a burial society and is working out logistics to introduce a medical insurance scheme to cater for its membership.
But first, a look at world and African news.
A police in Kenya today tear gassed a group of school children who were protesting the loss of their playground to a private land developer. Video from Nairobi shows children running in panic after police in riot gear dropped a tear gas canister at the front of a large crowd. At least three children were injured in the commotion.
Police in the Democratic Republic of Congo used live rounds and tear gas today to break up protests against a proposed law that could delay national elections. Opponents say the law requiring completion of a national census before elections would allow President Joseph Kabila to stay in office past the end of his term late next year.
The richest 1% of people in the world will have a majority of the wealth on the planet next year, according to development nonprofit Oxfam. The most affluent share of global wealth climbed to 48% in 2014, compared with 44% in 2009, and will likely pass 50% in 2016. The MDC formation of former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai says it is in the process of forming a burial society and working out logistics to introduce a medical insurance scheme to cater for its membership. The announcement follows a weekend meeting of the MDCT where Mr. Tsvangirai met with the Harare provincial leadership to discuss issues affecting the country and the party's roadmap for 2015. A party spokesman, Obet Gutu, says the draft constitution for the burial society is already in place. He says it should be operational by February. The party also announced that it will soon launch an electronic membership card. Gutu says the electronic card will improve the way the party's structures are managed. He adds Mr. Tsvangirai took advantage of the weekend meeting to explain how the two schemes will work.
He took that occasion to explain to the leaders of Harare province how the envisaged National Burial Society run by the MDC is going to be managed. I'm pleased and very excited to tell the listeners of Studio 7 that we already have a draft constitution of the National Burial Society to be run by the MDC. And this National Burial Society will enable our members to contribute very affordable amounts, say 50 cents, or $1 or even 5 rand every month. And also the idea of the medical aid scheme is almost on the same lines as the medical aid society, where party members will contribute very small amounts into one common pool to enable them to access medical services as and when they need to either go to a doctor or they're hospitalized or when there's a medical emergency, when they have to go for an operation.
May you tell the listeners which companies you are going to work with?
For professional reasons, Jonga, it will not be appropriate for me at this point in time to disclose the identity of the companies that we are going to work with. This matter is in its infancy because it has to be formally tabled before the national executive of the party, which shall be meeting within the next few days.
That was MDCT spokesman Obet Gutu on the line from Harare with Studio 7.
Still with politics, an aide to opposition political party Transform Zimbabwe president Jacob Ngarivume is recuperating in hospital after surviving what is suspected to be a poisonous attack, gas attack yesterday at Ngarivume's home in Waterfalls. The party said in a statement that an unidentified assailant was seen scaling the house perimeter wall after spraying an unknown substance into a room that Florence Onyimo was sleeping in. Ngarivume and his family were not in the house at the time of the alleged attack. By the time the security guards went to investigate what had happened, Onyimo was said to have collapsed. She was found unconscious in her room. Although doctors could not speak to Studio 7, party sources say they were informed that Onyimo had inhaled a toxic gas. We reached the party spokesman Sungai Mazando, who says the party suspects state security agents are behind the attack.
So apparently they sprayed that gas into a room where an aide of the president, Florence Onyimo, was sleeping. And then she started choking and vomiting. By the time people got to attending, she was lying unconscious. And then they managed to take her to hospital. As a result, the whole house was evacuated to make sure that the gas wasn't going to affect everyone else. A report was made to Waterfalls Police, and the constable Sabadi, who was attending, informed us that they would proceed with the investigations only after receiving a medical report. What report is going to be concluded, I'm sure, this evening by the doctor who's attending to her.
How is she today? Did you manage to see her?
Yes. I managed to see her in the afternoon. In the afternoon, she was complaining of headache. She was still having nausea. She was vomiting. But the doctor said she was stable. And they were still investigating to see whether it was actually a poisonous gas or what it could have been.
Any suspicions?
Apparently, we can't suspect. We don't really know which gas that it could have been. We are only hoping it wasn't anything close to hydrogen cyanide, which we know can be very lethal, and we've been reading about it of late.
That was spokesman Sungai Mazando of the Transform Zimbabwe political party. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Harare.
The Minister of Health and Education today launched this year's National Mass Drug Administration Program in Mutare, aiming to distribute drugs and treat millions of children suffering from bilharzia and intestinal worms. The program, now in its third year, will cater for school children the entire week. The ministry is expecting to reach all children between the ages of 1 and 15 in Zimbabwe's districts. Bilharzia is a disease caused by parasitic worms. According to the health ministry, 57 of 60 districts in the country have a high prevalence of bilharzia, while 31 districts have a problem of intestinal worms. 44 of the districts are co-endemic with both diseases, highly prevalent. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke to Dr. Poshia Manangazira, head of epidemiology and disease control in the Ministry of Health. She explains the ministry's mission to continue the national plan on an annual basis.
The drug for treatment of intestinal worms is albendazole. It is available in chewable form, so we are able to treat children as young as 2 years. So we actually start from 1 year to 15 years old. But the pros and cons, we do not have the pediatric preparation, so and the tablet is quite big. So we start the treatment for bilharzia at children aged 5 years to 15 years. But we are also flexible. We allow the members of the community and even the families where these children are coming from to also approach our, you know, the centers that are going to be giving the drugs.
How should parents and children prepare for this if they are interested, of course, in having their children given treatment?
Very important. The parents and guardians and even the community members must also do their preparations for this program. The first thing, it's very important that the children are in as stable a condition as possible. In other words, we do not want sick children to be sent to the MDA point. If a child is eligible but they are not feeling well or they are taking other medication, that information must be provided before they swallow the medication. And then secondly, we also encourage the parents and guardians to ensure that the child has eaten well the morning of the mass drug administration. In most of the areas, they have actually prepared a pre-MDA meal, which the children take before they are given the drug. And then finally, we also want them to read around and get adequate information. In the past, we have had a lot of myths and misconceptions.
That was Dr. Portia Manangazira, the head of epidemiology and disease control in the Ministry of Health. She spoke with Tatenda Gumbo from Mutare. Meanwhile, the Minister of Health says malaria remains a major threat in the country, especially to pregnant women and children under the age of 5. Speaking last week at the SADC Malaria Day, Health Minister David Parrenyatwa said the ministry is scaling up efforts to combat the disease. He said 63% of the people in Southern Africa are affected by malaria, and in Zimbabwe, Binga Wange, Mutoke and Mount Darwin are being the worst affected.
Coming up now, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Much has changed in the 3 decades since HIV, the virus that causes AIDS, was identified. Even as recently as a decade ago, a diagnosis of HIV/AIDS seemed like a death sentence for an entire continent, said Secretary of State John Kerry. Back then, more than 2 million people died from AIDS-related causes on a worldwide basis. Today, we've cut those numbers by 34%. Back then, AIDS threatened to wipe out a whole generation, leaving behind 14 million orphans and vulnerable children. Today, we've slashed new infections among children in half. The tide has turned, said Secretary Kerry. We are fighting the disease, and an AIDS-free generation is in sight.
PEPFAR is now supporting life-saving antiretroviral drug treatment for 7.7 million men, women, and children. We're providing HIV testing and counseling to more than 14 million pregnant women. We're training more than 140,000 new healthcare workers to deliver HIV and other health-related services in AIDS-affected countries.
But the battle is not yet won, said Secretary Kerry. So the United States is intensifying the fight against this terrible disease and introducing new strategies. First, PEPFAR is collaborating with the Nike Foundation and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation in a $210 million public-private partnership to achieve an AIDS-free future for adolescent girls and young women in up to 10 countries. Second, we will invest $116.5 million to strengthen the capacity of health workers to deliver life-saving HIV services and also help address other public health threats across Africa. Third, through the Accelerating Children's HIV/AIDS Treatment Initiative, PEPFAR, and the Children's Investment Fund Foundation, over the next 2 years, we will double the total number of children receiving life-saving antiretroviral treatment across 10 countries in sub-Saharan Africa. We are also working with our partners to accelerate the development of new pediatric medicines. Fourth, PEPFAR and the Millennium Challenge Corporation are partnering to invest $21.5 million toward creating country-driven local data hubs that will include data critical to controlling the epidemic, including health, poverty, and gender data, and will be used to improve strategic planning and quality of care. The United States' commitment to combating HIV/AIDS through PEPFAR and our long-standing support of the Global Fund is as undiminished as our work is unfinished. We can achieve an AIDS-free generation, said Secretary Kerry. we can and we will defeat this horrific disease.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government, and that brings our show to an end. My name is Chris Gande. Good night.
And I'm Jonga Kandemire.